Welcome to the Lighter Side of the Dark Side. It's your weekly freak show here on Renegade Radio and all podcast catchers, YouTube as well, Spotify, wherever you're listening to us. It's the Dark Mark Show. I am Dark Mark, the goth comedian, and I have my Count Chocula at the ready tonight. And as always, everybody's favorite horror writer, Nicole Sachs.
Good evening.
Are you drinking blood again?
Is that what that was?
It is some very good red wine. It's a 2021, so it's 2 years old, and it's from California.
And it's mixed with...
It's not Orange mixed. Crush. It just smells like it because I had it in the cup earlier. So it smells like Orange Crush, but tastes like wine.
Is that the wine that I got you, Nicole?
No, I already drank that. That was okay. Cool. Yeah,
you
that was.
You want to know a secret about French wine?
Yes.
In 1848, all the French wine died in a freezing, frostbitten, weather-enhanced adventure, which the frost killed all the French wine. And they had to go to Texas and get the vineyards, because it was the same environment, to replenish the French grapes. So all wine in France, all French wine is from Texas.
Wow.
You learn something new every day, Nicole, especially when you have this guest. He's been on a couple times before. We love him. If you are into vampires or vampire lore at all, you know this man, I'm sure. He is he's the author of several books. He's the impresario, the man who puts on the vampire ball, the vampire salons all over the world. It's always great to talk to you. It's always great to catch up with you. And thanks for being on. It's Father Sebastian.
Hello, Dark Mark and Nicole Sachs.
Hello.
Hello, Father Sebastian. And you're now Nicole's drinking wine. You're drinking Liquid Death. And I am actually drinking our sponsor, Raise Energy Drink. And this is the best. Now, I'm sure there's a vampire energy drink somewhere. And if there isn't, Father, you really should work on one. But before you do, I got to tell you, you got to beat this one. And this is the best energy drink I've ever had. This is Baja Lime Flavor Raise Energy Drink. And it's delicious. It tastes like Baja Blast from Taco Bell. They've got other great flavors like Ginger Ale, Juice Box. Galaxy Burst that tastes like Fruity Pebbles. And the best part about Raise Energy Drinks, zero calories, zero carbs, zero crash. Don't pay full price. They're not in the 7-Elevens. You can get them at gyms and GNCs. Go to our show description and get 15% off a case of Raise Energy Drink. I put mine in a little wine snifter just so to go along with the vampiric talk that we're going to have today. Go ahead, Nicole. It sounds like you're chomping at the bit to ask Father a question.
Okay. I'll start with the most pressing matter. How excited are you for Friday? And are there any surprises we can expect?
And what's Friday, Nicole?
Friday is the Vampire Salon. And we're going to be at Pour Vu, which is an absolutely amazing location. It's one of my favorites.
Well, you are in agreement with the rest of the audience that loves the Babylon, Endless Nights Babylon. So what surprises do we have? During the pandemic, I wanted to do something a little bit more intimate and more high scale than the Endless Night Vampire Balls, which are pretty high class. And I wanted something that was 150, 125 people, but it was more magical. Okay, it was more based on magic. So I came up with an idea, and I was looking at names, and I was going to do it in Vegas because you could party in Vegas during the pandemic. Mm-hmm. And in 2020, I was very, very sad to see the pandemic occur. And as a club promoter, an event coordinator, and an impresario, I was like, I need to party. And I need to
create. And when Father Sebastian says, he means it. The fangs are out.
So what happened is I looked up names for doing an event in Vegas, and I couldn't find any nicknames. I like to find like local nicknames. Like in Paris, we have Lutetia, which is the nickname for is the Roman name of the city of Paris. And I couldn't find anything, so I looked up Reno, and Reno had a name called Neon Babylon.
Oh, that's cool.
And I was like, how the fuck? Excuse me. Can I curse on this?
Oh, yes. Please. We encourage profanity, please.
Okay. How the fuck can I can Reno have a cooler name than Sin City? Neon Babylon is like one of the coolest names I've ever heard. So right. I said, that's it. I'm going to steal the name and make it Babylon. And then I was with Mark Patterson. Michael Patterson from, I was thinking of you, Dark Mark.
No, thanks.
Michael Patterson at a socially distanced IHOP breakfast. And he showed me that his successor of Cloak and Dagger was going to be called Babylon after I booked the House of Blues Foundation Room in Vegas. And I'm like, oh my God. But he spelled it B-A-B-L-O-N, B-A-B-A-L-O-N, which was the goddess Babylon. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, okay, we're going on this Babylon naming journey. And then I go, I have a 5-year plan for Babylon. And someone's like, what are you, a communist? I'm like, no, it's fucking Babylon 5, the TV show. Because you know they're communists.
A lot of nerd cred there.
Yeah, and I was like, Babylon 5-year plan. So what I wanted to do is I wanted to tour Babylon around the world. Okay, we did Babylon in the House of Blues. It was designed for the House of Blues.
Mm-hmm.
But I really think it belongs in LA. Babylon, the movie Babylon took place in LA. Mm-hmm. So we've done Babylon in Boston, in New Orleans, in Dallas, which was really cool. We had a bathtub with all the performers in the bathtub full of blood.
Mm-hmm.
So, that is cool.
Yeah, that was really cool. Maybe we should do that on Friday.
Nicole, you're going to go into the bathtub of blood?
Well, what I'm wearing is black tights, my Wednesday Addams shoes, and a little black dress. So, I mean, I'm not afraid to get into a tub of blood. It won't show up, but it could be cool.
So that's a yes.
I'll be wearing my nice jacket, of course.
That's a yes.
Until my event director finds out, hey, we need a tub full of blood.
Is it going to be real blood, though? Because, like, I don't know if I could do that. The smell of real blood just would be gnarly.
No, it'll be chocolate.
Oh, okay. See, this sounds enticing. Well,
now you're talking Nicole's language.
Yeah, I think a lot of women will be like, let me in a chocolate blood tub.
Yeah, I think so too.
Trust me, I went to the BBW con. That would have worked well there.
What's that?
Convention for big, beautiful women, models and adult actresses that are very large.
Oh, intriguing. Yeah. I love bigger women. I love women with goddess-sized love.
Yeah.
Now, how big are we talking?
Well,
I love curves myself.
Shall not be displayed upon the public.
Ah, you see, you gotta have all your options open.
Well,
but you're not to the waif look. You like curves.
I love curves. I love voluptuous women. I love, mm-hmm. I love me. You know, if you look at my ex-wife and my ex-girlfriend, you know, you'll see, I'm fond of that.
Okay. All right. Well, these are some very curvy women, a lot of curves. So anyway, so you have a bathtub full of blood. And
that was in Dallas.
That was in Dallas. Now, Dallas has a great goth scene because I performed at the Convergence Festival in Dallas in 2017. And what a fun time that was.
Was that at the church?
They had it all over the place. They had like several different clubs going on at the same time. The church was like the main hub. But I performed at this club called The Nine, and James O'Barr, who wrote The Crow, showed up, and he was real cool.
Oh, cool.
And, David J. played. It was fantastic. It was such a great time. And I didn't know there was such a great goth scene in Dallas.
He did the Dallas Vampire Ball there 3 years in a row, mm-hmm. and it was one of the biggest endless nights.
Yeah.
But sadly, since the church closed, the Lizard Lounge closed, we haven't really found the right venue for it.
Right. Well, Lizard Lounge, yeah.
Closed? Do you know why it closed?
Yeah, because they wanted to turn it into condos.
Oh, that's a shitty reason.
Well, that's an economic reason that you can't compete with.
That's true.
Human beings, Nicole. Human beings. They have no thought for vampires and people that are cool. That's the thing.
Yeah, and you know, what's cool about Dallas is there's a lot. I mean, it's got a great goth scene. You're right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or the people there turn out and support their community.
They really do.
Yeah.
We gotta hang in Dallas, Nicole. You'd love it.
I've only been to Houston. I'd love to take a trip to Dallas.
When I first met you, actually, is when you did our show 5 years ago when you first moved to L.A. From New Orleans. And
Weren't you from France?
Oh, you were from France. Okay. Because I moved to New Orleans, and you're like, oh, I just moved to L.A. It was a weird thing. So maybe I'm getting my things.
A lot of people think I live in New Orleans because I'm there all the time. I'm actually looking at property down there.
Okay.
And I really love New Orleans.
I do too.
If you feel like it, you can share about your grave.
Oh, yeah. So I was...
Nicole asks us about it to every guest every week to share about.
Well, we're on the topic of New Orleans, and you're talking about living there. But what about renting there?
I have property in New Orleans. It just happens to be St. Louis' number one cemetery. So what happened was I have a lot of rivals. Okay, mm-hmm. People that try to like. They always go, oh, you're king of the vampires. I want your crown. I'm like, I throw parties and make fangs.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And I write a couple books to make it more interesting,
mm-hmm.
To give depth to the fangs. And one day I got this phone call from this woman named Shannon McCabe, who ran a vampire ball in Sacramento. And she's like, I need you to come up and make fangs up in Sac. I'm like, a ball sack of California. So I went up there and I made her fangs, and she was so much fun. We became like brother and sister.
Mm-hmm.
And she runs a vampire ball on the same night I do, but just in Sacramento. And she's like, dear brother, I can never go to your biggest vampire ball, so I'll have to come to the LA ball. So she like kind of is like my right hand person for the LA ball.
Mm-hmm.
But we spend all the every free moment we spend time together. And she's like, we're going to be together for eternity. And I'm like, you're married. She's like, not as that, but, you know, brother and sister. Because I just talked to the owner of my grave, and I got the title from Ricardo, this guy Ricardo. He's an artist in New Orleans who's who has inherited four different grave sites. And so he handed over one of the grave sites in St. Louis, number one cemetery to Shannon, and they invited me to be buried there. You can't buy that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So my name, Father Sebastian, is on a grave in St. Louis, number one cemetery, down the street from Ray Laveau and Nick Cage.
So that proves that you are a vampire because we can visit your grave.
Well, it depends on what you determine as a vampire.
Have you taken pictures with your grave yet?
I will more than enough. And when I go down to New Orleans at the end of the month, I'm going to be doing lots of tours because let me show you something cool.
And you know, Nicole, the graves are above ground in New Orleans.
Yes, I do. It's a New Orleans fact. And for the people who don't know, it's because the waters rise, so they have to protect the bodies.
Right. I've been to quite a few New Orleans grave sites. I did not see Father Sebastian's grave. Next time I'm there, we'll make a special trip.
Absolutely.
Put flowers on his grave. Some wine and orange crush and Yoo-hoo and absinthe.
I actually got invited to New York today, next year in October. So that'll be my first trip to New York if it happens. I'm pretty excited about that.
Ever?
Yes.
Ever.
Okay. Where's that? Where he's got the Catholic Cemeteries Family Pass, St. Louis Cemetery number 1, number 305. So, people, if you want to visit Father Sebastian's grave, I just gave you the directions. That's very impressive.
You got to take a tour in the graveyard because you can't go unless you're a family member or you're going to be buried there. So
that makes sense.
Yeah. So I'm going to
do tours.
Yes, we even got to paint the grave. I can have picnics in there.
That's so cool.
Nice. I'm going to picnic at my grave. So when I go down to New Orleans for Halloween, I'm going to be doing tours of the grave. And it's not going to be as hot as it was this damn summer.
So I have a thought for you. This isn't really it's about death.
go figure.
You're so
when
gone.
I was considering getting like my stuff in order, like all that, I was considering that I wanted to be cremated and then buried with a plant growing out of me. Do you think you want any plants on your grave?
No.
Okay.
I want to be put in a box, and I want to be turned into diamonds.
Oh, cool.
And then distributed amongst my friends.
That's interesting.
I haven't thought that far ahead, but then again, I'm not Nicolas Cage.
How can you be goth and not have thought about your final resting place, Mark?
And you know what I do for a living, so I should have something. But you were mentioning that you're going to New York for the first time ever, which I'm very shocked.
It'll be for New York Comic Con next year. Say, Father Sebastian has quite a history in New York.
I grew up in New Jersey. Don't tell anybody, please.
Mm-hmm. That's well, you revealed that on a previous show, but we won't direct.
Oh, really?
Episodes, yeah.
But New Jersey's actually pretty cool.
Well, you were born in San Diego.
A lot of cool people came out of Jersey, for sure.
I was born in San
Diego. Gerard Way of My Chemical Romance came out of Jersey.
Right.
Really?
I didn't know that.
And the Toxic Avenger and all sorts of people. Tony Soprano. Yeah, all those people. And where in New Jersey? I forgot. Where in New Jersey?
Red Bank.
Okay, all right.
Jay and Silent Bob Land.
Yeah, Kevin Smith, where he grew up.
Came out of Jersey, yeah.
Yeah? And we're both in L.A., and I see him every morning at the lake walking around. He's really tiny.
He's lost a lot of weight, for sure.
Yeah, I met him once. He was great, and we were talking, and he was such a friendly guy. But, of course, as with every celebrity, and I've said this before, that I meet them with their wife. Their wife dragged them away from me very quickly. So that happened all the time. But so you grew up in Red Bank, and then you became, your club empresario beginnings were in New York.
What happened was I had a girlfriend from Princeton. Her name was Dawn.
Mm-hmm. Humblebrag.
Dawn wanted me to get fangs for her prom, and she got sick. She had lupus and Lyme disease.
Mm.
And she was in poor health, so she had to miss her prom. So the next year, we went to my prom.
Mm-hmm.
And I found a fang maker. She wanted, like, the immortal vibe. She wanted to be kind of feel healthy and immortal because, you know, vampires, when they turn someone who's sick, they become the epitome of health. Mm-hmm. And they can run further and jump higher.
Mm-hmm.
Run faster and jump higher
right.
than a human. So she wanted the fantasy of being a vampire. So we got a beautiful purple velvet dress for her. She was a fairy. She was fae. She was lupine. She was a witch, and she was a vampire. She covered all the bases for me. And we went to the prom dressed as vampires, and I got fangs for us on the 8th of November, 1993. Or it was the 3rd of November. I can't remember the exact date, but it was right after Halloween 1993, and my prom was in June of the following year because I graduated high school in 94. That dates me. Oh my god.
We're all old, don't worry about it.
And so Dawn and I started exploring the vampire culture and Vampire the Masquerade, and we went into some games, and she was a Toreador and I was a La Sombra, and we had a great time. And I was working in a sexy shoe store called Wild Pear in the Bridgewater Mall, working with three metalheads and a gay guy named Lou.
Mm-hmm.
And this kid comes in with a girl under each arm, and the girls would come in and buy shoes to go out clubbing because they'd break their shoes all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these cheap shoes.
The Frankenstein shoes? Or?
Yeah, we had Doc Martens and stilettos and stripper shoes and all sorts of shoes.
Mm-hmm.
Like all the Wild Pears.
Right. No, I remember Wild Pear.
Working a Wild Pear, and this guy comes in. A lot of girls would, like, while they were driving into the city, they would stop by Wild Pears and get some Wild Pear shoes. And we had discount shoes and all sorts of things. And it was, like, really affordable prices. And the three metalheads, there's four metalheads. Tommy, Sean, Murphy, Paul, and I still am in touch with Paul. Okay. And Lou, this gay guy with a mustache.
Mm-hmm.
A mustache.
Define mustache. You know, like a handlebar mustache, or was like a Fu Manchu?
I can't remember
or...
exactly, but he was
porn stash.
But we loved him because he was our captain. And
I'll bet he was.
Yeah, he was our captain, and the first mate was Paul.
Okay.
We all had long hair and wore poet shirts and pirate boots, and all the girls loved us. And I was like finally getting attention from a lot of ladies, and I was loving that. And one night this guy walks in, and Jay Velge, and he's like,
"Not a fax machine?"
Yeah, and he's like, "You mind faxing my guest list in the limelight?" And I'm like, "You mean limelight?"
Right.
And he was like, "Yeah, limelight." And I was like, "Limelight?" He was like, "Yeah, the limelight, Sebastian." Right. And he said, "Feel free to put your name on the guest list. You're helping me out, because I got to fax my listing by 9:30 and great. It was 9:25 because the mall closed at 9:30. And I was like, "All right." So I put my name on the list. And
do you want to explain what the limelight is for those of our viewers who do not know? Because it's pretty famous.
If you ever seen the movie Party Monster, that should explain everything.
Right.
This was the biggest, coolest club in New York in the mid-90s. This was a Studio 54 on steroids, but for the 90s, basically.
Yes.
And it was a converted church turned nightclub.
Yeah, it was deconsecrated church, and it was owned by a guy named Peter Gation, who had an eye patch. And there was a murder in the club by a club promoter named Michael Alec. And when that murder happened, I was able to run my vampire parties in the back. But Jay Velge went to me and he was like, "Do you have fangs?" And I would wear my fangs while I sold shoes to strippers and club kids and stuff like that.
As you do.
As you do.
In the mall. Wild Pair.
He's like, "Where'd you get them?" And I tried to call the guy that made them for me, and he retired. And I was like, "Oh, fuck." So Dawn and I kept going to Limelight, and we were having fun doing that. And next thing I know, I've got my own guest list called the Menu at Limelight. So if you were on the menu, you're food for the vampires. Dawn eventually got too sick, and we kind of parted ways, because her dad was like, "You know, she's, you know, not in the shape to be in a relationship." So we called friends, and I started dating a Parsons School of Design student by the name of Luciana. And I was involved in the Vampire the Masquerade games because I thought I would be able to find real vampires in them. I've always been on a quest for vampires since my mother told me about vampires when I was 14. Right. She told me about Tom Cruise becoming a vampire for Interview with the Vampire and losing weight. And I was like, I was 15 or 16, 14, somewhere around there. And
well, you made your mother fangs.
Yeah. Well, what happened was I went to my grandfather and I said, "Grandpa, can you teach me how to make fangs?" He goes, "You're crazy. You're a Satanist." And I'm like,
"That's besides the point.
That's just because I'm a Satanist. I get to wear fangs. I'm a Satanist. What about Halloween, man?" He's like, "Oh, that's Satanism." So I went to, so my aunt felt bad for me. And she went and she was like, "I know a dentist up in Bedminster, New Jersey, that can teach you." So I went up, and while I was in community college, because I basically failed out of college to go to make fangs.
Which has turned out to be the best career move ever.
Pretty fucking cool, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So all the people listening, all you young kids going to college, drop out, make fangs.
Well,
but I mean, you work hard and you do a lot. So, I mean, you're still going to be working hard, but it's going to be fun.
I work my ass off.
I know you do.
And you know, if you do what you love, you never go to work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I started making fangs as a dental technician. I got trained by a dental technician for about a year.
Mm-hmm.
And then I sat my mom down and said, "Mom, I can't afford to buy you a Christmas present," because I was like 18, "but can I make you fangs?" And she's like, "You mean like Anne Rice?" And I'm like, "Sure." And so I made her fangs in a kitchen on a farm. And then I started making fangs at Limelight. I took a little corner of the office and I started making fangs there. And next thing I know, I'm networking my butt off, making fangs around the world. And in September, in June of 1995, I met a girl named Sandy. I wish I was in touch with her today. But Sandy did something amazing. You know what she did?
What'd she do?
Does this have anything to do with a blowjob or?
That's none of your business.
Okay, so that's a yes.
So I was at the Dark Shadows Festival at the Marriott Marquis, and I met this girl named Sandy. I made her fangs.
Okay.
After I made Neil the Catholic priest fangs, because I made two Catholic priest fangs in my day.
Well, I was reading that. I was reading some articles today from back in the, you know, New York Times, New York Post, and they were talking about how all these religious figures would come to you and get fangs, especially a Catholic priest.
Yeah. And it was cool, but Sandy is, you got to focus on Sandy, because Sandy was...
Oh, no, I'm focused. Trust me. I'm laser focused. Sandy,
I was a wee 19-year-old boy making fangs for the first year, and 1995 is what the year that changed everything. I was working at Limelight. I was making fangs at the Bank nightclub on Houston Street. And Sandy and I got to know each other really good. And she was like, would you like to be my date for the Anne Rice Memnock Ball in New Orleans? And this was the year after Interview with the Vampire came out. So everybody's high on Tom Cruise and Brad Pitt and Antonio Banderas and Kirsten Dunst.
Anne Rice has never been hotter.
She was never, that was her peak.
Right. And she's always big, but this is like supernova big.
This is four A-list actors.
Right.
Four A-list actors played in her movie. And Geffen Pictures put $500,000 to $1 million into a party in 1995 to rent her orphanage and have, it was nuts. So Sandy was a journalist, sorry, a publicist for a band called Typo Negative. She worked for Roadrunner Records. And Sandy was from LA. I believe she was from LA. So we met in New Orleans after me making fangs all summer and all fall. And I saved up and I bought a velvet coat. And I got on the plane to go to meet her in New Orleans because she was coming from the West Coast. And we, I remember meeting my mom, which is what I call the spirit of New Orleans. I got off the plane, got my luggage, and the doors opened, the sliding doors opened to the pickup area at the airport, which was outside, and I felt the humidity for the first time.
Yeah, I felt it too.
And I was like, that's my mom saying hello. And
this is the first time you ever went down there.
Yes, my first time in New Orleans was Halloween 1995. And as far as I know, I am now the oldest active vampire in New Orleans that does business there or lives. I don't live there, but I do have an eternal presence there because I've been doing an event there for 30 years. 30 years next year.
Right.
And what happened was I met Sandy at the bed and breakfast. I call it Airbnb, but there was no swing back then.
The kids, it was just a bed and breakfast. The air came later.
Yes. And we were right near the movie theater where Brad Pitt saw his Superman movie at the end of Interview with the Vampire. And I was like, oh my God, scenes from New Orleans. Oh my God, this is a great. And then we went down to Decatur Street and we went down to Decatur and Ursuline. And there was the Dark Crystal nightclub on one corner, the Convent nightclub on another corner, a Vampire Pizza place on one corner, and the Gargoyles, the goth shop on another corner. And it was the crossroads. And also Poppy Z. Bright's book, Lost Souls, the hideout bar where her vampires met was like two doors down from Gargoyles. So it's like five vampire things from media right there all at once. And
that's
pretty
cool.
And that was my, and then I went and had on Lower Decatur, I went down to Coop's and had alligator for the first time. Alligator Bites. And that was my first night in New Orleans. It was a Thursday. Friday was the Anne Rice Memnock Ball. And it was in the Garden District, which is a whole different reality than the French Quarter.
Right.
And we went, Sandy and I went and we got dressed up. She had a thing of dressing like Wednesday Addams.
Mm-hmm.
And she was really, I mean, she was just such a cool hostess. And we went down to, we got in a taxi and we went to the Garden District. We were staying in the Garden District, but close to the French Quarter. Went deep into the Garden District and went to St. Elizabeth's, and there was 2,000 people dressed, 3,000 people. I don't know how many, but a lot of fucking people dressed as vampires from, and the best costumes I've ever seen since to this day. And what happened was it was getting dark out. It was like Twilight, not the movie.
Yeah, no pun intended.
No pun intended.
Mm-hmm.
No pun intended.
Right.
And what happened was a horse-drawn curse comes around the corner and the crowd goes nuts. And there's two coffins in it, one on top of each other. And these ushers come out and they place there's the iron gates at the door with the brick pillars. And they prop the coffins against the pillars. And they open the one coffin and Anne Rice comes out and the crowd goes batshit.
That's amazing.
That was the best. I mean, I'm 19 and I mean, I'm never going to be able to outdo this. Nope. Right. Not going to be able to outdo it. And she's saying hi to the crowd. And, you know, she's waving like the queen of fucking England.
Mm-hmm.
And she was. She's queen of the damned.
Yeah.
And the next thing you know, she's like, I have a surprise for everybody. She opens the other coffin and Kirsten Dunst comes out of the coffin.
Aww.
Dressed in the dress she died in Interview with the Vampire. But it was 3 years after it was made. And she had become a woman since then.
Oh.
So she was very busty. And I was like, oh my God, this is awesome. And they got in a carriage and you walk through the gates, you greet Kirsten Dunst and Anne Rice in the carriage, and then you walk through her doll collection to get into this place. This ball was 6,000 people. It was huge. And they had they made their own beads, Mardi Gras beads. They made it was ridiculously crazy how beautiful this thing was. And the costumes were nuts. There was like one room with Victorian dancing. There was one room for her book signings. Anne Rice just loved her fans.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then on Saturday, I was at that ball until 6 and 7 in the morning, till sunrise. I was there.
I would hope so.
And out with actors. It was the most incredible night of my life. And the next day I went to all these after parties and mansions all around the French Quarter that people rented.
Mm-hmm.
And I met this one woman named Mistress Alessandra. She's a Latino woman who is fairly busty. I mean, mm-hmm. goddess sized, as I like. Mm-hmm. And she had a pentagram and slaves doing her bidding. And you can see her picture in a book called Shadow of the Vampire.
Okay.
Okay, which is interviews with people that went to the Memnock Ball. And that was just half of the weekend got even crazier, but I don't want to take up all the time.
No, I mean, I'm still trying to get the impact that Sandy had on your life besides that. Just exposing you to that?
Well, the next day she said, would you like to go to a haunted house? And I'm like,
is that a rhetorical question?
And she's like, it's a little wild. You better be ready because it's owned by Phil from Pantera.
Mm.
And I'm like, are you shitting me? And she's like, no, I told you I work in the metal scene as a journalist, as a publicist.
Oh, if the guys from Wild Pair knew you were partying with the guy from Pantera's house, holy crap.
So I went and the taxi dropped us off in front of what was under a bridge. okay? It was in Metairie. And there was a line of jocks. This is before Columbine, when they felt the sting of the rock and roll jocks that beat us up and treated us like shit.
Right.
And there was this guy, and it was the huge haunted house with four police cars in front. And evidently, Phil from Pantera gave his little brother acid and got caught.
Oh, no.
And the magistrate, which is, they don't have judges down there. They have magistrates because they're on Napoleonic law. All right. They're a very unique state. What happened was Phil had to raise $250,000 for charity for the police to get bulletproof vests. So he decided to open a haunted house to make the money.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a the line to get in was a mile long.
Sure.
Okay. And all I see is all these metalheads dressed as zombies running around out front, and this guy called the preacher going, "Sinners, you're gonna die, sinners. Come to me and give your eternal souls." And he was like preaching Satanism. And they had Baphomets all over the place, and the police are like, "Don't give a shit, they're getting bulletproof vests." And the preacher goes, "Where's Tommy Jones or Tommy Miller or something like that?" And a bunch of zombies came out of the front door and walked down the line, and this guy starts running away from them. And evidently they grabbed him by his legs and they dragged him into the front door. And then you hear chainsaws go, "Help me, help me." And the chainsaws going off. And oh my God. They walk, the door, the line stops and the door closes while the chainsaws are going off. And then they open the door and they walk out with bloody sheets and body parts coming out of them. And they throw them in the back of the ambulance, a real ambulance. And the ambulance turns its lights on and drives away.
Oh, Jesus.
That's fun.
And this is the entrance to the House of Shock.
This is already better than the last Pantera album, I got to tell you, honestly.
I'm commenting on that one.
Oh, they're not supposed to touch you. I got touched.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really?
Second.
Yeah, the chainsaws they use in haunted houses, the chains aren't real. And so, but there's no blade or anything. They still like ran it right across my jeans, and it scared the shit out of me. I'm still like, the sound of chainsaws kind of makes me a little anxious.
So they technically didn't touch you with their hands.
No, with their chainsaw.
So I guess they technically can do that.
I don't think they were meant to scare me as bad as they did, but they were obviously trying to scare me. They just got a little closer than I felt comfortable with. Yeah, I mean, it really did. It went right through my jeans. It was scary.
I mean, you've been talking about the various women that you've been with, and I know, and maybe we'll get into it, maybe we won't, what a ladies' man you are. But if you want to attract the women and be... You'll never be like Father Sebastian and have that way with women. But if you want to do better, get our sponsor, Tactical Soap. Because, first off, as Father knows, washing with soap and water is always a good step to getting women. And if you use Tactical Soap, that is pheromone-infused soap. They have three different types, Bond, Maverick, and Durden, and three different scents of those. They have deodorant. They have all sorts of things. Pheromone-infused. Go in the link in our podcast description and get your Tactical Soap. So, no, but I see in your eyes when you talk passionately about these women that you've known, and these are, I mean, obviously we're just scratching the surface.
Well, you know what? I'm going to say one thing. The women that I've dated are amazing people.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. They've been my mentors. They've taught me, each one has given me a great lesson about life. And I really am grateful, and I'm friends with the majority of them. And I will tell you that I love being married. It's mm-hmm. awesome. And I wouldn't give it up for the world, but I'm grateful for my muses.
Yes.
And I can tell you that, Nicole, you know a lot of them. they're women of great quality and exceptional individuals, and they are all part of Endless Night in their own way.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, you got it, and I'm envious. And I was telling Nicole a couple weeks ago, I only strive to date extraordinary women, and there's plenty out there. And maybe I should settle for less, but I don't. And so I don't date as often as I would like. But it's quality over quantity, that's for sure.
I think we were discussing this last week in the studio, and I said there are times where I won't date at all if there isn't somebody that's like interesting, like if there's somebody that has that spark. And I think that you need to have that. You have to have that spark in order for you to feel a connection.
Right. Or that cute emo haircut and a Twinkie frame.
Go to my YouTube channel or my Instagram. There's a on another subject. My favorite movie is Vampire in Brooklyn.
The Eddie Murphy movie.
Yeah. I watch it for the first time in like 10 years. And
I can see that again. Yeah.
Eddie Murphy does a phenomenal job.
Now that surprises me. That's your favorite vampire movie, Vampire in Brooklyn.
Oh, well, evil is good.
Right. You know,
the scene where he played the preacher, Eddie Murphy in his costume, and he played the white guy that kept getting the white guy hitman.
See, now I got to watch this. I just rewatched Queen of the Damned a couple weeks ago. Or actually, yeah, last week when you were supposed to come into the studio, and I was like, so we went home, and I was like, fuck it, I'll watch Queen of the Damned. And and my girlfriend was actually in the concert scene they filmed in Australia when they did that. So I remember, I haven't seen that since I saw it with her like 20 years ago. But man, it was Eddie Murphy, Vampire in Brooklyn. That's amazing. I got to watch that again. It's been so long.
I'd like to watch it again too. It has been a while. I remember really liking it though.
I remember it being better than I thought because everybody told me it was a piece of shit.
Well, fuck them.
Okay. I'm just saying. Well, they're not vampires. They have no idea.
The movie opens with that the vampires were started in Egypt, so it has a little Anne Rice connotation there, because Anne Rice, mm-hmm. vampires to Egypt.
Right. Mm. Queen of the Damned.
And a lot of the vampires were killed off by the humans, and some of them went to the Carpathian Mountains, escaped to the Carpathian Mountains, and a couple went deep into Africa.
Mm.
And that's where Eddie Murphy's character comes from. And the way he courts
Angela Bassett, yeah.
Bassett?
Yeah.
His acting was phenomenal.
Right.
And people agree with me? Fuck them.
No, and Angela Bassett's always top-notch acting-wise and beauty-wise. So, I got to watch that again.
Phenomenal woman.
Phenomenal, phenomenal. What is your favorite vampire movie, Nicole? I think we've talked about this before. Because mine is The Hunger.
That's a good one.
Because
I really love Queen of the Damned. It's not my favorite, but I really love it.
Mm-hmm.
I would say, this is going to be silly, but Night Flyer. Is the one with Miguel Ferrera, who I think is such an underrated actor. I think he's fucking fantastic. He plays a journalist mm-hmm. who's hunting a vampire that flies a plane and murders victims from port to port.
Hmm.
And then there's this scene, right? Where he's then looking in the mirror and he's taking a leak, and the vampire comes up next to him and takes a leak too. But you can't see the vampire in the mirror. You can only see the red stream of blood that's coming out of his urethra. I just thought it was a really great movie.
So the vampire urinates blood?
He does, yes.
Okay.
What else would they urinate?
Urine?
You know, one thing that really blew my mind, and you know, there were sequels to Lost Boys.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. The Tribe and something else. Oh, yeah. The Return, The Tribe. Yeah.
The Frog Brothers or something.
Right.
There was one scene in there that really blew my mind, was vampires jumping out of an airplane. They didn't
even. Yeah. Have...
They can't fly, but they can definitely glide and levitate.
That's cool.
Another one I really like is Near Dark. Near Dark is pretty fucking fantastic.
There you go. There you go. Yeah.
But I like the book Night Flyer too. I really like the concept. In the book, the journalist is very interesting. He talks about, he works for a tabloid, so he's chasing the story, and he doesn't believe it because he says, you don't write anything you believe and never believe anything you write. That's like his belief system. And so he just gets wrapped up in this situation where he's dealing with a real vampire. And he's like, it was terrifying. I thought it was really good.
Very Interview with a Vampire inspired, but I gotta see this. I never heard of it.
Yeah. It's old, like Miguel 90s. Ferrer.
It's old, like the 90s. Yeah, it's one of those old movies from the 90s.
30 years ago.
I know. Trust me. Thanks for reminding us again. But which is a brilliant segue, because I was going to ask, you know, like I say, I haven't seen you in a couple of years. All the live events, because we were talking about how you were doing them on Zoom, and now all the live events are back in full force. But there's a whole new generation culturally coming up. The Gen Yers, the millennials. And is there a generation gap as far as vampires and vampire activity?
Vampirism is more accepted.
Mm-hmm.
For example, I put in lower fine print that, you know, there's three types of vampires in the vampire community. Well, five, technically. There's twins, blood drinkers, psychic energy vampires, life philosophical and aesthetic, black swans, which are like friends of the vampires and donors, scholars that are kind of like a version of watchers.
Right.
And those are the five basic people in the vampire community. And I spell vampire with a Y when I want to talk seriously about vampire lifestyle. And that means that they're a combination of all three, sang, sai, and lifestyle. And my book, Black Veils, kind of gets into the culture of vampirism. And it talks a little bit about the energy work and magic and stuff like that. But what's great about the vampire lifestyle is that it's a fashion statement. It's a lifestyle. It's a kink, because you have the dominant and submissive role.
Mm-hmm.
You have magic in the occult. You have fashion. And you have some vampires that are into blood play.
Mm-hmm.
There's also a group of people that role play just out of a kink, being a vampire and a donor.
Right.
Vampire and a prey.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing wrong with that. I think that's great. Yeah. Vampire community is really diverse.
Right. And, but these kids these days, are they approaching it in a different way?
No. They're doing it pretty much the same way. There's been a couple uprisings.
Really?
Yeah, people have tried to dethrone me, and I'm like, I don't have a throne. and I'm like, guys, I make fangs and throw parties for people to wear. That's what I do.
Mm-hmm.
And here's my book, Black Veils.
Yeah.
Do-do-do-do-do-do. It's available.
And you coined the term Black Veils.
Yeah, Black Veils have gone through various iterations. But in 1996, after I had where I got, you know, well known, was because I was at the right place in the right time. I was running Vampire the Masquerade games, and Luciana, my girlfriend, Sebastian, I don't want to do math in a nightclub anymore. And I'm like, what do you mean? She's like, I don't like all the game mechanics. Let's just get rid of them and do it like the Society for Creative Anachronism. If you can do it, you can do it. And I was like, okay. And I wasn't out of the coffin at that time as a lifestyle vampire. But what happened was, she and I threw a couple of vampire parties in back rooms of Limelight, and some fetish parties and stuff like that. And she loved being my submissive and my lady and everything like that. And Susan Walsh disappeared. And I had just, like, it was within a year of me coming back from New Orleans. I threw after New Orleans in 1995, I threw my first vampire ball in 96.
Mm-hmm.
And she was on my arm, and I love her to death. I hope she's doing well, because she went on to found Juicy Couture.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, she did well for herself. But
So every time you see a an ass with the juicy on it, you could thank Father Sebastian.
No, that was Luciana.
But she was inspired by you.
Yeah, and she loved going to Limelight, and because I was working at Limelight, she was like my Limelight girlfriend. Mm-hmm. And I got approached by so in 1996 I threw four vampire balls. I threw one at the Bank nightclub in January with Voltaire and the Empire Hideous. Mm-hmm. And then I had another one. That was my premiere one, which was nuts. So in 6 months, I threw three vampire balls. And the Limelight vampire ball was the same week that Susan Walsh, who was investigating the vampires of the Village Voice,
mm-hmm.
disappeared.
Right. I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah. And the media came down on me and was like, what's going on? And I'm like, I don't know. She just disappeared. Some people said that they last saw her at my event at Limelight. I had 2,700 people, so I couldn't keep up with everybody there.
Right.
It was the biggest event I ever threw. And I mean, my events are about 1,000 to 1,500 people now,
mm-hmm. with
higher scale.
Yeah.
You know.
More exclusive.
Yeah, they're more costume. They've developed.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened was, I got approached by this woman named Chichi Valenti, the mother of the Imperial Drag Queen Court of the Empress Chichi Valenti.
Mm-hmm.
She invited me to open up a night, an event in her club called Mother, called Long mm-hmm. on the Vampire Lounge. And she said, you need to make rules for your club. And I called them Black Veils. So the first mm-hmm. rule was 18 to enter, 21 to feed. Second rule was dress in all black, like a Victorian funeral.
Mm-hmm.
Third one was what happens in the club stays in the club. Mm-hmm. The fourth one was it's takeout only, no blood drinking in the club.
Yeah, by the way, kids, this is pre-DoorDash.
So that was the first Black Veils, and then they've evolved into 600 some odd veils I've written.
Right. Now, did they ever find Susan?
Nope.
No. Do you have a theory what happened, or do you not even want to speculate?
I don't want to speculate out of respect to her.
Mm-hmm.
She was investigating the village, the vampires of the East Village.
But that put a damper on things for a while, I would imagine, especially when you were targeted by the press.
And came to me, and she wrote a book called Piercing the Darkness, Undercover with the Vampires in America Today.
Mm-hmm.
For 3 years, the center of the vampire world on the East Coast was Long Black Veil.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody who was anybody at the time has attended LBV.
So why did you leave New York?
Well, New York was... Mother closed in 2000, June 20th, 2000.
Mm-hmm. And that
was my home base. And I stayed in New York, but I had a calling to Europe. Like, I had a calling to New York. I call it the whispering. It's like something calls me.
Mm-hmm.
Something called me to New York City. And then I was called to Europe, and just a series of events went down. That I ended up going to, ended up in Germany.
Right.
And I ended up living there for 3 years, and it was pretty wild.
We always talk about Anne Rice when we talk to you. She's passed since the last time we talked to you. How has that affected you and affected the scene?
I am always a fan. Mm-hmm. I'm not a friend of hers. I'm not a friend of her son, but I'm a fan, and I love being a fan. And I've been to a couple of her book signings, and I have her signature in some of my books. She was able to spell my name with two A's. She remembered. Mm-hmm. I was really honored. But there would be no Father Sebastian without Anne Rice, and there'd be no Anne Rice without Bram Stoker.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my viewpoint on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I really, 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 really respect the Unrise Vampire Lestat fan club. They've survived for 34 years. Mm-hmm. Their original party in New Orleans, even though Endless Night is on the Saturday night and five times the size, we really like the Unrise Vampire Ball is traditionally on Friday night.
Mm-hmm.
And that was when the Memnock Ball was on a Friday night.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a really nice flow for the people that go to New Orleans, because you go to an Anne Rice event in the Elms Mansion, which is really, really beautiful, but like it's like a Mardi Gras event.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you eat dinner and then you dance around and it's over at 11 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
Endless Night is more of a party.
Right.
Party with a really strict dress code.
Mm-hmm.
So both parties really equalize each other out. And we cover Endless Night is more about the vampire lifestyle and vampire magic and the ritual and the ceremony and a culture. Endless Night has its own culture.
Yeah.
So the Anne Rice event is really a fan event for Anne Rice's universe.
Right.
So recently the Anne Rice fan club, Interview with the Vampire, the TV show came out.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Which I haven't seen, but I've heard good things from you.
I really liked it. If you go into it expecting a comparison to the original movie, you're not going to get that. Okay.
And you shouldn't.
Yeah. I mean, they changed it up for the time. They did honor a lot of there's so many Easter eggs to the original concept, but they couldn't compete with the original movie. It was done too well.
Mm-hmm.
But they changed it up. They moved it to the 1900s and they added elements. Louis is played by the guy that played Grey Worm from Game of Thrones. And Claudia is a 14-year-old girl. Mm-hmm. And they changed it up a little bit, but it was a good show. And the season 2 is coming out, but most importantly is the Theater of the Vampires is going to be in season 2.
Mm.
And they got around the SAG. They're back in production. They got around the SAG because AMC agreed to the SAG's terms.
Well, and what? also SAG doesn't necessarily cover vampires, just covers humans. one of the best cosplays I've ever seen was when I went to the New Orleans Vampire Ball, your Vampire Ball in 2016 or 17, and there was, she had to be an adult, but she was very, very small, and she was in a wheelchair, and she was dressed like Kirsten Dunst from Interview with a Vampire. I got a picture with her. It was great. I don't know if you remember that. That was great.
It's a big blur, because one thing about Endless Night is that we are now in Salem.
Right.
Things, and they do a phenomenal job. They do mm-hmm. that at a hotel for 3 years in a row. And that's just, Ben and Lex from VanFangs are wonderful people.
Mm-hmm.
Very creative. And then we do the LA Vampire Ball at the Globe Theater. And we had Guillermo from What We Do in the Shadows 2 years ago. And then we had Kristen Bauer, who played Pam from True Blood last mm-hmm. year. But wow. I'm telling you, make her the permanent MC, because she just did... We were in the opera box and she came to me and she was like, and I'm like, see that throne? That's Pam's throne. She's like, should I? And I'm like, you should. And she's like, I haven't been in character in 10 years. And I'm like, go do it. The audience is going to love it, especially the Gen X guys.
Mm-hmm.
She comes out on stage, shits in the throne, and she pulls on the mic and she's like, you know who I am.
And oh, that's great.
Sassy as fuck. And I loved her. She's just like, Kristen Bauer is a delight to work with.
Wonderful.
And she has her own podcast on HBO.
Great.
And you can see her on Hollywood Arcane, my podcast.
There you go. Well, before we plug that, let me ask you. So you have all these different balls around the world. Tell me the difference in vibe and what makes them similar, what makes them different city to city. You know, you got LA, you got Salem, you got New Orleans, you got Europe, with Paris. Tampa. Oh, Tampa's got a great goth scene too.
This year we had them spaced all apart by 3 months. We had LA in February, then we had May, we had Tampa at the Castle Nightclub, which mm-hmm. is a great venue. Then we had the Salem Ball at the Hawthorne Hotel on the 9th of February, the 9th of September, and then we have the New Orleans event, which is coming up in 20th of October.
Mm-hmm.
But each, my favorite city is all of them. My favorite ball is all of them.
Mm-hmm.
Because what each one is interlocked with the other. Okay. Florida's Florida. I mean, Florida man, come on. You know, you got that, and the Castle Nightclub is awesome. And getting Floridians, half of them are in dress code and half of them trying. And you just we had to be brutal the first couple of years with the dress code there. In France, we really, 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 really love France, but running an event in Paris is a pain in the ass. But
how so?
Just the taxes and
oh, okay.
And like, there's a music tax that you got to pay in advance of the event, and it's crazy. But we had a vampire ball at Moulin Rouge.
There's Moulin Rouge,
Machine de Moulin Rouge, which was fantastic. Then 2 years later, we had it at a Cabaret Savage. And we had it in a circus tent. If you go to endlessnight.com, you can look at the old pictures and you'll see some of the pictures there.
Are you still doing the castles?
No, actually we got we used to do an event called Conclave, which was for my Fang clients and their friends. And it was in a castle in Austria. We did it 5 times and it was owned by the Evangelical Lutheran Church of Austria. And every time we did it, there'd be more paranormal activity after we left every time we went.
I'm sure.
And evoking spirits and nothing evil for real. But this was a real castle and it was a youth hostel. And they, one night something happened to one of the people after they got scared, like in Ghostbusters with Slimer, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And the bishop that owned the was owned by a church, the Lutheran Church of Austria. The bishop was like, those vampires can come visit, but we can't run events there anymore. And there's, but it was because there was so much paranormal activity happening there after we left. We haunted that castle after we left.
That's pretty cool.
I'm sure you've haunted a few places.
And then we used to have one in Berlin at a theater called the Delphi, which survived World War II. Mm. And Cabinet of Dr. Caligari was premiered.
Okay.
But that was hard to impress. We did that 4 years in a row.
A little jaded in Berlin, you think?
Berliners, you can't please them. There's nothing you can do that they haven't seen. And we did Paris, Amsterdam. We have salons and balls. Salons are like more intimate, like Friday night's a salon.
Right.
Dallas was big, but this year we did the 4 big events, and it was very, very nice because I wasn't stressed. Next year it's going to be crazy. We have 4 events in a month in May and June, just because of scheduling. We're going to do Paris Theater of the Vampires, the German Vampire Ball, and we're going to do we're doing Hammond Castle, which is perfect Cthulhu place. Ben and Lex are doing that, and that is an awesome venue. It's north of Salem.
Mm-hmm.
Real castle. That was brought over brick by brick by a shipping tycoon.
Mm-hmm.
And that's right on the bay of something near Boston. It's just freaking awesome.
Cool.
And then there's the Tampa Vampire Ball,
Right.
And we're doing something special, but we're not announcing it yet for Salem. The Salem Ball, because Salem's a special city because the witches are starting to get used to the vampires.
Oh, good.
Yeah, that we're finally getting along. Okay. And
no more beef.
No, there was never a beef. It was just kind of like, what's going on with these weirdos with fangs?
The witches are saying this.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I practice Strigavai, which means vampire witch in Romanian.
Okay.
And it means vampire witchcraft. What's really cool is Ben and Lex are such good people. They own Vampfangs in Salem.
Mm-hmm.
Really cool guys. They do a superb production. And they're going to be doing the autumn equinox from now on for the Salem Vampire Weekend.
That's cool. That's going to be a lot of fun.
Absolutely. I might have to come out to Salem for that.
Yeah.
Now, as I predicted, when we start talking, we just keep going. And I just have a couple more questions for you. And I don't know if Nicole has any more, but the first question is, how are you able to sustain this after all these years? Because especially in the club scene, everything flames out really fast. And you've been able not only to sustain things, but to make them bigger and bigger and bigger. How do you do that?
Fence. That's the key. You stay out of the local drama. You find a date that doesn't conflict with any of the local promoters. Then you put them all on the guest list.
Oh, wait, I'm right downtown. Okay, wait a second. Okay. That's how you do it.
Yeah.
That's
I do Babylon in Los Angeles because it's fun. I don't make money in Babylon here. I do it because I love to see people get together. That you got to love what you do. My father told me if you find your passion and fulfill it as a business, you'll never work.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm grateful for my father was the business mind, the marketing mind that inspired me, and I get it from him. My mother was the paranormal investigator. She loved the ghosts and horror movies and all that stuff. And I'm grateful to her for that side. So the two of them, of course, came together to make Father Sebastian.
I was going to say.
So it's sustaining longevity is really what the key is loving what you do and sharing that passion with your patrons.
Mm-hmm.
Every time I make a pair of fangs, it's like making a new friend or a new family member.
Mm-hmm.
Every time I have an event and I see someone dress up and they're in the theme, and they plan that costume for months and they travel across the world to go there, I'm grateful to them for being able to share my dream. It's about collaboration.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't make money on my books. I don't make money on my jewelry. I do that to create symbolism to be able to further the events and the parties and the fangs.
But you make money on the parties.
I call myself father, not because I don't want to be Lord or King Sebastian. I think that's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Okay, but I want to be the vampire dad.
Mm-hmm.
And I love my children, and I just love what I do, and people can feel it.
Now, Daddy, you explained the father thing perfectly, but Sebastian, where did you get that from? Because that's not your real name.
No, my birth name is Aaron. My mom and I were watching The Neverending Story when I was 9 years old. I came out in 83 or 84.
Mm-hmm.
And I was 9. So my mom goes to me, she's like, "Do you know why I gave your name Aaron?" And I'm like, "No, mom, why'd you give me my name Aaron?" She's like, "Because your grandmother wanted you to have a Catholic tradition where we would call you by your middle name until you became 13 and you would choose a saint's name. Aaron's an Old Testament name. It's the brother of Moses, Moses's brother."
Okay.
And what happened was, is you get a Hebrew Old Testament name when you're born, and then you get baptized, and then you get confirmed after you go to CCD.
Mm-hmm.
You choose a saint's name. So Sebastian was not even about vampires for me. Sebastian was the name that I chose because I looked up all the saints. And I love the name Sebastian.
But what really got me was he was the patron saint of archers, and I was in archery as a kid.
Okay.
That's very cool.
I chose Sebastian as my confirmation name, but my parents got divorced and we never got around to it. My grandmother died and anything like that. So I've been using Sebastian actively, and I love Bastion from the Neverending Story. So
right.
I'm from fucking Fantasia.
There you go. Well, we had no doubt about that. And apparently it was either Father Sebastian or Father Robin Hood. I don't know. The last question I have, so I'm looking forward to the salon, and I want you to plug everything you got going on and your podcast, which I haven't listened to, but I can't wait. Now, I am not part of the Sabretooth Clan. Nicole is, but
He had his hands in your mouth yet?
In my dreams. But I do have some fangs that I wore for a movie recently.
Sebastian's fangs are much better.
I know that. That's what I'm saying. Now, should I wear them or should I just let it go?
If they're good fangs, look. I love the reality that there's no way I'm going to be able to make ever enough fangs for the whole vampire community. The vampire community, the VC, is so big, and there are so many talented artists out there that are fangsmiths that there's 30, 40 of us, and we still can't keep up with all the work.
Right.
Okay. Most of the fang makers are done by October 1st with appointments. Okay. Sure. And I've invented a thing called 3D fangs, which is mm-hmm. 3D fangs with a dental lab, but mm-hmm. we're still working out the kinks on that. But are you asking?
Would it be a faux pas to wear non-Father Sebastian fangs?
Not at all.
I mean, they're not the rubber fangs that you bank down on, so it's not that bad. But they're just, I was in a movie, actually, Nicole and I were both in Robot Dracula, so I played a vampire and I got some fangs. So I was like, should I wear the fangs or shouldn't I?
If they're comfortable and they look good, why not?
Nicole, what do you think?
I think you should try. Find out if you like. I mean, I got fangs from Robot Dracula and I got fangs from Sebastian, but I'm probably not going to wear my fangs just because I just prefer not to wear fangs, but I am going to dress up.
Oh, I can't wait.
Here's the other thing, guys. The thing is that there's 1,500 people coming to Endless Night in New Orleans.
Right.
There's no bloody way I'm going to be able to make them all fangs.
Right, of course.
Okay. So there's other fangsmiths out there that are really talented. There's Ali in New York. There's, Leonardo Caviero in San Diego. And I go down to Leo's house and I make fangs at his house for my mail order because we're both in the same mood. So I go down on weekends to San Diego sometimes and I make fangs in his house on my mail order while he's making his fangs for his clients. So
by the beach?
By the beach, baby.
which is ironic because I discovered the goth scene in San Diego. Tell everybody everything you got going on, how they can make an appointment to get fangs, all the balls, all the podcasts, everything you got going on.
Up for fangs for this year.
Okay.
We're not taking any mail order until November. But you can. I have three main projects. I have Vampire Magazine, VAMPYREMAG, Vampire Mag. That's relaunching in after Halloween. We're releasing the cover for Vampire Magazine, issue 14, on New Orleans Vampire Ball. You can go to sabretooth.com, where you can find out about my mail order fangs. And you got to go to your dentist and get an impression. I have a letter that you give your dentist, and they make the mold. And then the third thing is endlessnight.com. It's not Endless Nights. It's endlessnight.com for all my events. And they're all tied together by Father Sebastian. And it's IAAN, the Dutch spelling.
Right. The right way.
Yeah.
And you say you've launched a podcast now. That's great.
Called Hollywood Arcane. I'm with Johanna Maresco of the Crew Shadows.
She's wonderful.
For those of you who don't know what a Crew Shadow is, do you know what a Crew Shadow is?
I know the band. I'm not sure the origin of the name.
The word Crookshadow is the shadow a gravestone makes. Isn't that cool?
That is cool.
Yeah.
Now I have a new appreciation for the Crookshadow. So, yeah, sounds like you got a lot going on. And, I didn't know you had to go to your dentist to get the impressions for the 3D fangs. That's amazing.
Well, the reason why we're doing that now is because dentists generally do a little bit better at making impressions than people that send them in four or five times and mess up the mold.
I was going to say, it sounds like it's very easy to mess up.
Yeah, I want to make the best possible product for my clients as I can. And it's really important that they do a really good job. So I just, for consistency's sake, now here's the thing that I'm going to tell you. It's a little mm-hmm. secret. Actually, I got to tell you after the podcast is recording.
Okay.
There's a secret to getting in, because most dentists won't do it, but you tell them, which is true. You're going to be in a theatrical production called the Sabretooth Clan, Hollywood. So we're dental technicians. We have a fully licensed lab. We're in the Valley, and we love making fangs, and we're really good at it. So, but we're booked up and we're sold out for the season.
Right. So wait till 2024 and maybe you can get on the list.
Yes. And go to impression by the letter that I send you.
Yes. And what does the future hold for vampires?
Future holds for vampires, I think, come out wherever you are. I think vampires, you know, I'm probably the first person to come out as a vampire publicly.
Out of the coffin.
Oh, but there are others that are doing it. I make a living off providing services for the VC, the vampire community, but most of my clients, I'm a portal to get into the vampire community.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that there's just going to be more understanding, more acceptance, and cooler parties. And I think there's going to be a lot more esotericism, a lot of more witchcraft and magic and spirituality bringing into the vampire community. I see the vampire witch thing taking off in Salem, and I'm really excited to see where that goes.
That's great. Do you think vampires will have their own pronouns soon?
No.
Okay.
I'll leave you with this.
Okay.
Okay. There's this whole new pronoun thing that's going on. Okay. And I was like, you guys, one kid went to me and he's like, I'm a they now. I'm like, all right, just tell me your pronouns and I'll go with it, but don't change them on me.
Right. Okay. That's the thing. Yeah.
But here's the thing. He goes, you should write in your books gender neutral pronouns. And I'm like, here's my book from 1998. Check it out. And he flips through it and he's like, use they and them. And I'm like, yeah, I've been using gender neutral pronouns since the 90s.
Right. Always ahead of your time.
Well, I just thought it made sense. You know, if you're referring to a specific person who identifies as a male or presents himself as a male or a female, you do that. If it's, you don't know who you're talking about, it's they, them to me.
Makes sense.
Wasn't that much of a jump to just to address someone who wants to be gender neutral or non-binary. I've been doing this shit for 25 years and it's not new to me.
Well, Sebastian, this is always, always a delight talking to you. I always have a great time talking to you and always learn a lot. Thank you so much for being on the show. And I'm looking forward. There you go. Looking forward to Friday night. Having my Count Chocula later tonight. And Nicole, tell everybody what you got going on and how they can get a hold of you.
Well, I'm excited to announce that I just wrote my first feature film for hire. It's called right now Don't Lose Your Head, but I think they're going to change the name. Mm-hmm. And it'll be out hopefully next year, and I'll tell you more about that as it develops. Right now you can find me as Nicole H6 on Facebook or Nicole Six Books on Instagram. And in my bio, I have a link to my latest book, which is Slow Burn, a poetry book.
Which you can find on lulu.com. And there you go. Hiding behind a Count Chocula box, as usual. I am Goth Comedian on all social media. Everybody, have a wonderfully creepy week. Bye.